Hey guys, JB here, the real Wolf of Wall Street, the guy that Leo played in the movie, but you knew that, right? Listen, here's the deal. Christmas is here. Right now, my entire store is on sale, 70% off. Guys, sales and persuasion are skills that you need for your entire life. For a limited time, right now, you can learn them from me, the best in the business, the Wolf himself, for 70% off. If you want to succeed in sales and entrepreneurship, then you must learn how to convince other people to say yes to your product, your idea, your service, or your vision for the future. And that's precisely what I'm going to teach you to do. Visit my website, jordanbelfort.com/store, and get your 70% discount on all products right now. Don't miss this. I had Logan Paul on my podcast.
Would Logan do it with me?
Logan would kick your ass, I think. You're riding a fantastic wave. How could you not make some mistakes along the way?
How can you be for small government and then have the government dictate all these things in your personal life,
exactly,
right? You idiots. You got it completely wrong.
Can't you just wake up and stop? I was walking down the hallway like a dotted bull with a needle sticking out of my ass. Tell me the five steps to like to the gain to the point where someone like you would say, I want this guy in my life. I want to help this guy. Hey, Jordan Belfort here. Not exactly in the Wolf's Den at this moment. I am home like pretty much all of you, but the Wolf's Den has been brought into my home. So consider this the den in my home, or still the Wolf's Den. I have an awesome podcast for you today with an awesome guest who's already been on the show once. His name is Brian Callum. He was probably one of my top two or three performing podcasts of all time. He's a brilliant guy, funny as hell, very well spoken. So I think it was the perfect podcast to release right now in regards to what's going on with the world with the coronavirus. Because what Brian and I talk about in this podcast is the rise of China, why they are successful in some regards, how the repression there has sort of become the norm where people just have lost civil rights, but they are okay with it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, there are many different systems out there besides what we have in the United States. I've been to countries like Russia where they wouldn't want to have a democracy quite like ours because it's been bred into that culture for so long. They always want a strong leader like a Putin. So on some levels, you know, how can you really say, you know, what another country should do with their political system? That being said, though, obviously there were certain things about the way China's, you know, lack of communication in terms of how they control information did definitely caused this pandemic to spread much more aggressively than it could have. I'm sure that was not their intent, by the way, and they've done a really great job now at catching up for the mistakes they made now, and they're trying to actually go out there and provide value, provide service, right? But definitely because of how, you know, typically in totalitarian type societies, they control the flow of info. They were very quick to stifle any voices that were saying this is a huge problem early on, and that definitely did cause this to spread far more aggressively, far more drastically than it would have ordinarily, right? That being said, I want to shift gears. Now, I want to just tell you something here from the bottom of my heart. This is not a very popular view right now, but I'm going to come clean. Here's the deal. I think this is a fucking sham. I think this is absolute nonsense. The way we're going about handling this coronavirus crisis, panic, scare, I think it's wrong. I don't think it was handled correctly. I think Trump was bullied into this against his own better judgment. I don't think that a nationwide lockdown is appropriate or it's possible. And I think it's going to end up costing far more lives than anything this virus could have ever unleashed on the US. Let me just give you an example here. In a year, 50,000 people die because of automobile accidents. 50,000. That's crazy. Guess what? People still drive to fucking work. They still drive their cars. They still go food shopping, and people die in the process. 50,000. And while I haven't looked up the current number right now, like at this instant, I did a little checking yesterday on this figure here. But last year, over 400,000 people died because of cigarette smoking. 400,000. That's 450 just in two minor categories. Forget about how many people die because they eat poorly, don't exercise enough. People die because of cancer, they stay out in the sun too long. I mean, do we shut the country down? Do we tell people you can't smoke? Do we ban all foods that would make people get fat? Do we close down every McDonald's? No. We live in a world where there's risk to the things that we do. People die every single day. Now, again, I don't want to sound like an idiot here, but I'm just saying one obvious thing. I'm looking at the numbers right now. I think 400 people have died in the United States. And, well, that's terrible. That's not a good thing. You don't want anyone to die, right? Far more people die. I mean, it's not even close to the amount of people that die every single day driving their cars, smoking cigarettes, eating poorly, not exercising enough, going out in the sun too much, or God knows what else. We need to live our lives. The amount of money that's already been lost and will be lost, and more importantly, by the way, the amount of lives that are going to be lost as a result of suicides, depression, poverty, malnutrition. You cannot run a society like this where you lock us all up in our houses because we're scared to catch a fucking virus that kills hardly anyone. Honestly, this is bullshit. The numbers out there are bullshit. Because here's the story. For every person tested, 10 people get this, are badly affected by it, and never get tested. So the mortality rate now, the thing is 1% is the mortality rate in the US. It's probably 0.1%. Guess what that is? The mortality rate for flu. But do we lock down the country because of flu? Think about it. This was forced on Trump, and I understand why. Because his advisor said, Donald, Mr. President, you will not survive this politically if you don't take drastic action. If your doctors, because all the doctors care about is a little narrow lens about we must protect human life. Yeah, I get that, doctors. We got to protect human life. You know what? But people die every freaking day. Every day by botched surgeries, by doctors on drugs. I'm seriously, if you actually look at the number of people who die each year because of botched surgeries or doctors that were under the influence, not that's a very rare exception, but it exists too, it's going to be more than coronavirus. It's more than coronavirus. I'm guessing more people probably choke on food and die each year, seriously, than they're going to die from coronavirus. And it's insane. Now, that being said, does that mean we do nothing? No, I value human life as much as the next person, I really do. And I'd be devastated if my mother died. I would. My mom is 86 years old, and she actually was exposed to someone that had coronavirus. Thankfully, she didn't catch it, and she's okay. But if I said to my mother, Mom, let me ask you a question. What would you think is the smarter thing to do? Should we stop the country and destroy the futures of your grandchildren? Or there's a 10% chance that you might catch a disease at 87 and pass away, 1 in 10 shot, she'd say, please protect my grandchildren. And any person with half a brain would probably say something just like that, similar to that. I'm not saying we abandon old people. No, I think the opposite. I think all the resources and destructive power this virus has unleashed on our economic system, if we would have taken 1/1000th of that, how much has been lost to stock market, $1 trillion so far? God knows what it is, right? Because it keeps getting bigger every single day. Take that money, let's sequester all of the old people, all of the immunocompromised people, let's take care of them, have them stay inside, we'll shelter those people in place, let's serve them fucking caviar and filet mignon every single day, let's have drivers show up in fucking spacesuits with masks on to deliver shit to them. Do you know how much money you could have thrown at, you could have taken every old people, probably brought them a beautiful retirement for the rest of their life by just secluding them and all the immune compromised people. And meanwhile, guess what? My daughter had coronavirus and now she's recovered. So guess what does that mean? She's got antibodies. Now she walks out there like a warrior. She can go visit my mother now. You know why? Because she's had it and she can't catch it again. She cannot catch it again. Those people that say they got it twice, those will, mark my words, those were false positives. They were never cured in the first place. You don't get a virus like this and get it again. You have antibodies. So now that my daughter has those antibodies, guess what? She can visit her grandma, because if she's exposed to someone on the way, she can't catch corona, my daughter. So once we know people are not shedding that virus anymore, they could be the warriors, the soldiers going out and protecting all the older people. Right now, we're operating timidly like sheep, huddled up like, oh, the coronavirus, the coronavirus. And no one's getting immune because of it. What the fuck? What the fuck? So we've destroyed the economy. I've been saying this for over a week, guys. So I know Trump is finally saying this now. I've been saying this for over a week. Check my posts. I've been saying this. This was stupid. This was a wild overreaction that was thrust by a few doctors looking at this through a very narrow lens. Yes, we want to protect human life, but if you try to protect human life and cause economic calamity, more people will die as a result of that than will ever die of coronavirus, which is turning out to be no more dangerous than the flu. Don't believe what you're hearing on TV. They're saying it's a 1% now. Untrue. Untrue. If you were to test everyone in the nation right now, you'd find that so many people had this and never even got tested that it's going to be no more dangerous than the flu. Now, this is just my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't fucking think so. And a lot of really smart people that I speak to every single day are agreeing with me in private. So now I'm going public. I'm just saying it. Fuck it. You want to hate me? Call me an asshole. I think this is insane. It's wrong. It's stupid. It's acting out of fear. I think we take this money and we dedicate it towards all the people who are most susceptible, the older people, the immune compromised. Let's take all this money that we're throwing out this fucking out the window here. Let's take that and give these old people, we could give them more beautiful retirements by just protecting them now, having them shelter in place. And yes, some will still catch it and some will die. The same way people die every year of cigarette smoke, for smoking, people die because they drive their cars, they stay in the sun too long, I'll go on and on. That's just the tip of the iceberg. The amount of self-induced activities that basically that cause death, it's gonna trump anything this virus could unleash on us. It's the frickin' flu. That's it. Bottom line. I heard another number. I think this didn't sound possible, but 58,000 people already died this year. I believe it was in the US alone, but it could be a global number, but either way, 58,000 people have already died this year because of the flu. So globally, there's 16,000 deaths. And 58,000 people have died because of the flu. But we've decided to bring the entire world to a halt because it's fashionable. Because a few doctors, I don't know what, is it the self-importance? This doesn't make sense. Just think it through. It doesn't make sense. People die all the time. Bottom line. And I get it. The older people, yes, they get fall victim. They need to be sequestered. All this money, oh my God, the amount of good tidings, of wealth we could have bestowed upon the greatest generation, they deserve it. But why are we doing it the opposite way? We're shutting the whole world down to save this much of the population. We could have just sequestered them and everyone could be working twice as hard and giving to them. Give to them. Let them have their beautiful retirements. Let them walk off into the sunset and some will die and some are going to die anyway. That's my opinion. And with that, I'm going to now switch on to my speech with Brian Callum, starting with our discussion of China. And, you know, what are the peculiarities to that country? What's good? What's bad about it? And also, you know, why they've done some of the things they've done. All right, let's go there right now.
That Pol Pot decided and Mao Zedong decided that there were some people who were irredeemable. They had just been too indoctrinated with the wrong ideas. Mm. Best to get rid of them and re-educate their children in these large camps. Sorry, mommy and daddy are no longer with us. That's a fact and a fucking reality. And I think the difference between you and I when we were in our 20s and kids now in their 20s is there isn't that threat. It's just a distant memory.
So moving back to China for a second, I believe
That is bad as it was, what happened in Tiananmen Square, it had to happen. Had to happen.
Yeah.
Because at that point, the Chinese government had not created enough wealth and security among the populace that they would have left. Free speech can't exist when people are hungry.
Yeah.
And everyone's in poverty. At that point in time.
Well, what would happen is, why is there a Politburo telling me everything?
I can't eat.
Yeah.
In other words, so what happened was they had to make a decision. We're not far enough along right now in our capitalist journey under the guise of socialism and communism that we can let people actually say what they want.
Right.
Free speech is inversely related to how much money is in the economy, because if there's everyone, as you said, the pitchforks come out and the people revolt, right? Yeah. And the Chinese had to make that decision. So I think, you know, it's interesting because, like, in some level, I look at China, I've been there many times, and I love the Chinese people. Mm-hmm. They're really great.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of the pull-upper there, the central planners there, Zhang, right? How much of this is they saying, you know, one day we will certainly be able to have free speech?
Well, it's a funny story.
But it's not ready. They're not ready yet.
There's a great book called The Wealth of Nations. I'm sorry, Why Nations Fail by Darren Acemoglu. I think they're out of Harvard. It's a phenomenal book because they answer the question, why do some nations fail? So why is Mexico a disaster and Arizona, which is just, you could walk across the border. I mean, it's very close. Why is it, you know, prosperous? And a lot of it has to do with the integrity of their institutions, with the integrity of sort of how much you can rely on the fact that you 100%. Have access to your private property. And you have
so much of it is about the police state, by the way, that the police will protect you in the case of someone coming in. It all comes down to, at the end of the day, it always goes down to police powers at the end of the day.
Well, society's who has a monopoly around, of violence, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because you need conflict resolution.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I, but if you, it's a great book because, and I said to, it makes such a great case for why some nations are prosperous and others are not.
Give me an example.
So the fact that I have, if you and I do a deal and I have a legal contract, and if you renege on that, you broke a promise, I can get restitution and I can go to a court that I trust. I have a police force that ultimately I can trust. I know the FBI may have its issues, but for the most part, we know we can trust those institutions. That is very, very important. And when you don't have
Don Corleone.
Well, there you go. But when you don't have that, nobody trusts the system. So your credit card means nothing. It's all about cash. And what happens is the people with the biggest guns take over and your police force gets corrupted and all that stuff. Darren Acemoglu, and they do a great case in this book, and they said, I said, have you given this to, like, the Russian, to Putin and the people? They should read this book because they could, their countries would be more prosperous and free, and they don't have to sacrifice individual liberty for, you know, order, stability, and prosperity. And he said, we gave this book to, none of the top guys who are older read the book, but the younger, the people that are next in line all read the book. All loved it, and we're all like, we can't wait until those guys are out of power so we can, who knows what'll happen. But it was a funny kind of anecdote.
You know what's interesting? One thing you need to consider here, and I think it's really important to bring up, is that we operate from a belief system that everyone wants what we want. Mm. When I was in Russia, and I spoke to the cab drivers and the people, they're saying, we love Putin.
Mm-hmm.
Russians like a strong, we want an authoritarian leader.
Yep.
We want to be told what to do. It's our culture. It goes back to the time of the czars in the 1600s.
That's true.
We don't want what you have. We don't want, everyone shouldn't be able to speak freely because we don't want that. It's not our way.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
I think that's why we have to be, when a bunch of guys who had never been to Iraq and knew very, I lived in the Middle East for 8 years of my life. And I lived in Lebanon and Saudi Arabia. And I knew, and I'd been to Syria, and I'd been to Jordan and all those places. And I remember when I was listening to our leaders, George W. and Cheney and Rumsfeld, and some of the people, the architects of the Iraq War, like Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, William Kristof, those guys. Bill Kristol. And I was listening to them, and I was like, these guys have never been to the Middle East. And they had it sounds to me like they have the hubris to believe
what
that they can restructure the Middle East. But wait, Iraq, Babylon, with a historical footprint that goes back 5,000 years, same thing with the Persian Empire, the Iran. You guys, who don't know anything about, you don't speak a word of Arabic, you've never been there, and certainly never Iraq, and really probably, I could tell they'd never read any history of the Middle East. They just hadn't. In fact, I remember when Bush was reading a book on the Middle East. He was reading a history of the Middle East. And I'm like, all right, guys, so you guys are going to, Douglas Feith, who was the undersecretary, I know all the names, because I listened very carefully, and I was like, you guys are going to go in there and restructure Iraq. And I remember when they didn't know the difference between a Sunni and a Shia.
Mm.
There's no reason you should. But there is if you're going to go
well,
in there and
try to restructure. If you want to try
that, that Sunni Shia divide in the Middle East is so important when you want to know about the situation on the ground and their history, especially if you're going to be in the business of regime change.
Bombs strapped to your chest? Yeah, no bombs strapped
yeah,
to your chest.
I'm an,
it's exactly, almost that fundamental by the way. It's a very, very, very
maybe.
Even way to look at it.
But as an actor, I'm an actor.
I get it.
And I went and I remember going, I got a question here. If you guys take Saddam out, what happens if? How do we stop it from becoming a theocracy like Iran? Who's going to take his place? Are you guys going to put the Shia in power? Because then, what happens to the Sunnis?
Yeah,
these were questions that weren't answered, and the same thing with Afghanistan.
So, well, you know what Saddam did with his bath party? What, you know, he basically was, through violence and terror, was able to fucking bring all the people together.
Well, that's right. He was trying. He said, "You forget being a Sunni Shia. You have to be a Ba'athist."
Exactly.
Which means really, you're a pan-Arabist.
Right. Exactly.
You're Arabic.
Yeah.
And that was the idea of unifying. Abdel Nasser, who was the president of Egypt had the same issue.
Right.
Yeah. I like that you know all this shit, dude.
I know all this stuff.
I love this stuff. Because so many people don't. And
NASA was great. He was in the 60s, but he came before Sadat, right?
Yeah, and they say the CIA probably put some poison in his liniment.
Probably.
Who the fuck knows? But he was a threat. But that idea of creating sort of a pan-Arabic sort of, you know, crescent where everybody would unify, very difficult to do. But those things were a threat. And when I was either Paul Bremer or Douglas Feith said, No Ba'athists are allowed to be associated with the
government.
United States.
Yeah.
And the entire military, they were like, dude, but wait, hold on. All of us are Ba'athists because we had to be. You can't fire us because we're the ones with the guns. And the next day, bombs started going off. That created the insurrection.
Yeah.
That meant the general saluted, I can't remember who it was, but the guy was
Petraeus?
In charge. Nope, it was the guy before that, and said, but we can keep peace in the streets. We're the ones who know how to do this. We have the guns. You're going to put all these people out of work.
Yeah.
These are young men with guns. These are generals like myself with guns. You want to turn us into, we'll be your enemy now. We don't have a choice. And the bombs went off the next day.
You know, it's interesting. When I changed the format of my podcast at the beginning of this year, because originally I just started in like September. I said, for the first few months, I want to experiment and see what's what, right? And then ultimately I said, you know what? Most of the people, as you said, you got to listen to what people are telling you. And you stop listening to what the people want, you got a problem. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people wanted me to talk more, which is why I now start off with 20, 30-minute monologue, whatever's on my mind. Also, one underlying theme is also people want me to talk more about current events, what's going on in the world, because there's so much disinformation and misinformation out there.
Yeah.
And it is a topic that I love and have a deep understanding. I've always just had this fascination with current events and also history and how...
I can tell.
You can trade back, right? But, you know, so recently, let's shift to what happened in Iran recently, right? And most kids, like, I started talking here in my office, and the kids were looking at me, at the kids in the 20s. The kids nowadays, they know nothing, right?
I know, man. I'm
kids,
old.
But they were looking at me like, how do you know this shit? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? How do I know this shit? And it's like, basically, they had no understanding of what happened with the Shah and how he was put in power and overthrew an elected leader back then, which then started everything that led up to this point in time. And I think what I'm driving at here is the problems that we see and the reason why it's just so impossible, it seems, to solve things. We drew lines in the sand and restructured places that have 5,000 years old of histories and feuds and tribal laws, and you just can't do that.
Well, you know what Alexander the Great did? Alexander the Great would never go in there and change everything. He said, look,
you adopt the Bible.
You guys
there
can
you
all
go.
Run your own fucking country.
Hence Christianity, by the way, formed because they say
he Hellenized the world.
Yeah, bingo.
He Hellenized the world.
Let's freaking, what's the least common denominator? there, yeah. and that's what I'll be.
He said, I'm not going to come in here and tell you how to run your affairs.
Right.
I'll let you guys all stay in power. Just have your, just pay taxes.
Machiavelli.
That's all.
Very easy to conquer a place. Very hard to rule a place.
The Afghanis always said that. The Afghanis said, we'll let you in.
Yeah, we'll let you in.
We're not letting you out.
It's
like one of those
fucking Roach Motel.
Yeah.
It's the fucking Roach Motel. You can check in, but you never fucking leave.
You never fucking leave.
No, it's
yeah,
bad.
Man. Yeah.
So what makes you, it's interesting, I didn't pay you as a student of history like that. It's just something, so you're fascinated by just the love that just...
Well, I grew up all over the world, and so I saw the difference between a good idea and a bad idea. I think that's what education does. Education is very important because it'll teach you the difference between a good idea and a bad idea. It'll teach you to recognize that. You know, I think it was Albert Camus said, one cannot avoid political and philosophical commitment in the 20th century.
Mm.
And there is a difference, I think. You and I come from that generation where you better have an understanding of political philosophy, because we've seen what happens when you vote in a fascist. We see how many people, we buried 80 million people at least between in the European Civil War, which was World War I and World War II. And that was really a battle over ideology. That was a battle. And then we had a Cold War and proxy wars that was a battle about ideology. What's the best way to govern? Communism or capitalism? Democracy or totalitarianism? These were debates that were fought with real guns and real lives. And so you and I, whether we know it or not, absorb the idea that you better be on the right side of your political and philosophical history, because it fucking counts. Because people die if you don't. We have concentration camps to point to that and everything else. That was an ideological, that was educated, remember, educated, thoughtful, well-read, smooth-cheeked, clean men with good hair were the ones who said, let's take this problem called the Jews, the gypsies, the homosexuals, or whatever, and let's get
eradicate
rid of them. That Pol Pot decided and Mao Zedong decided that there were some people who were irredeemable. They had just been too indoctrinated with the wrong ideas. Mm. Best to get rid of them and re-educate their children in these large camps. Sorry, mommy and daddy are no longer with us. That's a fact and a fucking reality. And I think the difference between you and I when we were in our 20s and kids now in their 20s is there isn't that threat. It's just a distant memory.
So the problem I have, let's bring it to the present, right, is that they're mislabeling things and using words that are deeply, deeply rooted in terrible things. They're labeling Trump a fascist. They're calling nationalism and equating it with Nazism when they're just like, they're so different.
Yeah.
They're not even the same fucking, when I want, and I
it's not so
this,
fair to the people that really did.
Exactly.
Those, that
it's what you're doing yeah. is the same way. It's like, hey, let's take down this monument of a guy because now it doesn't represent our ideals.
Yeah.
It's like, let's not longer learn from history. Let's try to erase history, pretend it never happened.
Mm.
But listen, you could hate Donald Trump, by the way. I don't like everything he says. The guy's not a fucking fascist. He's just not.
Yeah.
It's not even, even when they try to explain it, and these are educated people that work at institutions like Columbia and the top, most revered universities, putting labels out there and indoctrinating youth, right, the youth of America right now and the world, into things that are blatantly false.
Yeah.
They're just fucking false.
Yeah.
And it's not just that, but so why do you think that is? Do you think it's because you put up a really good point? These are things that were wars were fought, people died over them. Is the problem today that there's nothing to worry about? And we try to create something, stir the pot in some reason because there isn't the real cause. Those just like fucking Martin Luther King. It was a just fucking cause he had.
Well, Freud said
the women's revolution in the 70s.
Yeah.
Just fucking cause.
Yes.
I don't think the Me Too movement is the same thing anymore. While there was problems that had to be addressed, it's the people looking for a fucking conflict.
Well, Freud said something I never forgot. He said he and Einstein, I think, had a correspondence, and Freud said, you can't stop people from going to war, because if you do, they're going to go to war with themselves. They'll kill each other.
Basically.
You know, the society will turn on itself.
There you go,
yeah,
right?
There is partly some of that. Yeah,
going
there's
on.
That idea that, you know, my brother against my brother when I have no longer anybody else to fight out there.
Let's have a common enemy in the end. That's the purpose of a common enemy in some reason, right? We always unite around a common enemy.
Genghis Khan had a problem that in this book I'd read about him. He would have his guys go in and do all kinds of terrible things, take everybody as a slave, kill whoever's in the way, and we'll just conquer and take what you want. And he'd have the boys in training ride behind the warriors so they could see how it was done and learn techniques and learn how to fight and all that. Problem was, when they were a nomadic people and they'd have this big settlement, the boys started doing that to the women in their own village. And they were like, why can't I do that? What do you mean? We were just doing it to those people. They look exactly like us.
Right.
And so Genghis Khan had a problem of internal order, because he had to come up with
sure.
a code of ethics, or at least a code of just sort of like, you can't just say don't
do
this.
Do others, not do it themselves.
You know what I mean? So it becomes a snake
eating
its own
tail. Rule.
It's one of the reasons that the Mongols, they say, kind of after he died and then his son died, one of the reasons they kind of imploded, because there wasn't a moral or ethical bedrock to kind of base a society on.
I believe that's true. It happened to me at my own firm, by the way.
It did, right?
Because I did everything right, but lacked the ethical code at the core of it, so the core was rotten. Mm. I don't believe you can build a sustainable organization around a rotten core.
Right.
It can last for a while. It can be very, listen, it can succeed wildly for a while, but eventually it will turn itself and eat it. It's almost eating, it's when you see it happen with the liberals, right? They're eating their own people right now, because you can't attack everybody as being something, a label, and this one and that one. Eventually, you'll start eating your own.
Yeah, that becomes this weird virtue signaling thing. Even Obama said we're becoming a circular firing line.
That's what I'm saying. That's
and,
my point.
I couldn't agree more.
And I'm about as socially liberal as you can get.
Me too.
So, but I'm watching this stuff happen. It's very different right now. See, I don't think the liberals that are doing this are really liberals.
No.
They call themselves liberals.
They're tyrannical.
But they're not real liberals. The liberals are the exact opposite of what these people are.
They're tyrannical.
Yeah, it's just
and
crazy.
I think, talk about an echo chamber, the humanities departments in most of these institutions.
I'm
not quoting Jordan Peterson, I'm who I've had on my podcast twice.
And who's right, by the way.
Yeah,
he's a brilliant guy.
But I noticed that having gone to those institutions, having gone to boarding school up in Massachusetts, having a lot of those very smart people on my podcast, and I would get down to brass tacks and I'd be like, are you a Marxist? Are you advocating for an 80% tax rate on our wealthiest people? Well, it works in Scandinavia. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't, but that's
no,
besides the point.
And you're ignorant.
You're an idiot.
That's not true. That's such a stupid
argument.
It's
a stupid argument. It's not true.
It's very capitalist in Sweden and Norway in a lot of ways.
Totally. And I've been there.
Yeah. And
many
high
times.
Tax rates, yeah, so you know. But these things are thrown around, and Peterson does a very good job of kind of like mapping out the genealogy of how this all happened, and so he's a better person to talk about it. But like anything else, I think you know, you start to try to out-liberal each other. And I saw that with the Democratic Party.
Crazy.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
It's insane.
It's just like, huh?
Scary. It'll never happen. But I think...
Americans are not extremists.
Yeah,
Americans
exactly.
tend to be moderate in general.
I think that when it comes to how it happens, I think about this the whole time. I have some theories that, you know, probably collectively circle around the truth. I don't think there's any one truth, but I think a big part of this... There's two things. A, believe it or not, and I know you know some people are going to hate that I say this, McCarthy was right. He had a point. Wrong way, people were, you know, probably went too far. But the infiltration of our educational institutions by fucking socialists has finally come to light. It's there. Mm. It's there. The people that are—
Certainly in certain institutions,
In most institutions—
Yeah, not the expensive ones.
They are fucking— what do you call it? It's not socialist. Not really communist. Socialist.
Well,
Marxist, Leninist, whatever you want to call them. It's insane, the belief systems that many of— Listen, I watch my own kids, okay? I watch them go to college, and I watch their views get radically altered by being in these institutions that teach things like where that they think AOC is like a hero in some level when she's
She's 28.
She's also not the sharpest tool in the fucking shed. That's a separate issue here. But the things that she's saying are just insane. They don't make any sense. They're not rooted in reality. They don't work. and they've been tried and failed miserably everywhere.
But with a lot of these people, like especially in institutions, academic institutions that are teaching these kids, number one, they live behind walls. They, you know, I think D'Souza said something like, if you're against the wall, they live behind the biggest walls you can imagine.
Right.
Physical and
yeah, tenure,
and
walls of tenure.
But it's also, try getting into Harvard, dude. It's really hard. You got to, right. You know. So, but they've also never had to make the trains run on time. There is something about getting your hands dirty. When you run a business.
Dirty when jobs. Man, I love that guy.
When you run a business, when you run a restaurant, there is minutia. There are details right. That unless you've done it, it's just like fighting.
Right.
You can talk, you can read all the books you want about boxing. You can read all the books you want about jujitsu. If you're not competing on the mat and right. Getting hit, you're never going to understand. It's like whenever I was watching this guy, Yair Rodriguez, great fighter in the UFC, flashy, knocking dudes out. And Brendan Schaub, who's my partner on the podcast, Fighter and the Kid, fought in the UFC for almost 10 years. And he said, "Man, it's not going to work for the good guys." And I go, "It is too. Look at that. He's spinning and kicking." And he goes, "No, it's not." I go, "Why?" He goes, "It's just, I don't know how to explain it, but it won't." And he was right. The guy fought Frankie Edgar, who's a boxer wrestler. And Frankie was like, "Your kung fu is no good here, bro. I'm just going to stand in your..." And you wouldn't know that unless you'd fought in his level. There's an understanding,
yes.
An intangible understanding that comes from
knowing.
Experience, from winning and losing, from having to make a profit. And when you have people like Paul Krugman, et cetera, writing essays on economics and winning a Nobel Prize, but you've never run your own fucking business, bro.
Right.
You're in a world of theory, and theory's great. We need it. But I also need practical knowledge. Here's another great example. My buddy who is a SEAL Team 6 guy, I mean, up close and personal dude. He spent 14 years in the SEALs, the real deal. And I said, when do you have your gun in a firefight? When is it on automatic? Like, and he said, "That's for assholes and actors. That never happens in a real firefight." I go, "You don't have your gun on automatic?" And he goes, "No." I go, "It's a burst sometimes." I go, "What if you're laying cover?" He goes, "I've never done that. I don't know what you're talking about." My whole idea of a firefight was from the fucking movies.
Right.
Of course it was. You don't have your gun on machine. You don't come in and go, "Gig." Well, that's all I've seen.
He's counting every bullet.
He's not doing it. That's not how you do it. You know, there's a little, that one little naivete detail where I was like,
sure.
I'm a fucking idiot. And I do think a lot of that's going on. And they're teaching young minds. But you know.
Well, it's part of it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the other part. The other part is this nonsense about everyone gets a trophy.
Yeah,
I don't think everyone should get a trophy by any stretch of the imagination.
Good luck in life, bro.
Right? And that combined with the third trifecta here is revenge of the nerds. Is that the people that are in massive power in terms of the flow of information were typically not the people who were picked first on sports teams, who didn't get the girl, who had very troubling adolescences because at that time, rightly or wrongly, you know, they were nerds, so to speak, and they don't want anyone to have to experience the same pain they felt during their adolescence. So they want to equal the playing field so no one should stand out, no one should be special, and now they're already rich as fucking Croesus, so it's okay. But the point is they're trying to rewrite the rules of society. So it's like, you know, when you see inevitably, I don't want to listen, you're going to hate me, I'm fucking going to say it anyway. I know some of you are going to hate me and boycott me, so fucking boycott me. But when you see some social justice warrior kicking and screaming and having a meltdown, she's usually not so good looking. I hate to fucking say it, but I'm going
to
say it.
You're not the first person to say that. Okay?
All right? I
remember Rogan on his podcast, we were talking about, there's this woman who is like very, very, she was trying.
She's a fucking nightmare.
She was pushing in other words, non-binary stuff, and she's very, very, you know, pro-trans and all that, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's okay, but
he showed me, we brought up a picture of her, and there's an issue with her biology, right? She has trouble. She was very, very heavy.
Whatever. God bless you. Don't fucking force it on everybody else.
There is probably some of that. There's an essay that's hilarious called "Never Trust Anybody Who Hasn't Been Punched in the Face," and it's a fucking great essay about the fact that there's something about doing sports, where being a wrestler, being whatever you are, a football player. You come into contact with objective reality. And I'm respectful to all dudes because I don't know you. I don't know you. So if I'm going to say anything to you and it's going to be a shitty thing to say, or I'm going to insult your girl or something, where I come from, I better be ready to get punched in the face.
Right.
I don't, and I've done enough wrestling and boxing and all that stuff to know that there are dudes that look like the UPS man that can change my whole fucking life. And there's something,
in a second.
Yeah, and there's something good about it.
The respect
sports
it gives
teaches you.
You
fucking respect, bro. It does.
And
it
reality.
Teaches you. It teaches you how tough you are, but it teaches you how tough you're not. And that's a good. That's a nice thing to know as you're navigating life. It teaches you humility, and you walk through life a little measured, a little courteous. You should do that anyway, but when you get your ass floored on a football field, or you get punched in the face, or somebody ties you in a pretzel in jiu-jitsu class, you remember that. You tend to remember how easy it is for another man to impose his will on you.
Right.
I think that's worth something.
And it's worth, whether that will could be through jiu-jitsu or through debating or whatever it might
be. Whatever it might be.
Or winning
competing
and losing in
and
business.
To be good at something.
Just being, moving through the world in an empowered way and not in a glass fucking bubble where you think it's a safe space.
That's exactly right. Competing, competition, and you learn about yourself. It's like somebody, I guess I said this once and I was very proud of myself, but I guess I said, somebody said, oh, he texted me and said, you said something cool. I said, what? He said, if you want to get to know yourself, you want to really get to know yourself, you want to get self-knowledge, get good at something. Because getting good at something is requires you to learn how to talk to yourself, to face up to what you're weak at, face up to what you're ashamed of, who you're pretending to be. These are very important. These are very important questions to ask yourself.
I brought up three things, right? I brought up The Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
Right?
Great movie.
Everyone,
great movie.
Everyone gets a trophy. The infiltration of our institutions with socialist thinkers back in the 50s that never got rooted out and are now fully taken hold.
Yeah.
What have I left out, in your opinion?
I think that trifecta is great, but I think the one thing to take heart in is Americans are already... they're already making fun of all of that stuff, including the people who are the authors of it. I mean, it's at least as a comic and anywhere you go, Americans just tend to kind of go that humor is a great
gut
weapon.
Check.
It's
check.
A great fucking gut check, man.
And they try to shut
and instead
them, well,
of criticizing,
but they're trying to shut the comics down as well.
They'll never do it. Good luck.
They did with what's his name?
Who?
What's his name? Who got to? What was the comic's name? Who had the with the bald head? What's it? Louis. Yeah.
That was a little bit different. And by the way, he can sell out theaters right now. I mean, Louis could still sell anywhere.
He's
he wanted.
That guy.
That was more caught up in a very specific moment in time.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there were these allegations and stuff like that. And I think that he's already, every time he gets up on stage, he gets a standing O. Mm. So people want more of him. He's just, that's kind of a voluntary exile for now. But for the most part, I agree with you.
I think that the tide is beginning to turn. But the
problem is a lot of these kids are coming out of college and they can't find a job, dude.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
If you're studying, if your area of focus was gender studies or whatever it might be, hey, listen, God bless the fact that you're compassionate enough to care about equality. Very important. No, I want to live in a society where you are measured by your merit, not any characteristic that you were born with.
No
whatever.
Doubt
we
about
all
it.
Feel that way. If you don't feel that way, you're a dum-dum.
Right.
And I understand we still have a ways to go. But if you're going to college and getting yourself $100,000 in debt and your fucking major was communications... or it was gender studies
and fucking humanities.
Hey man, good luck getting a job. You're gonna have a hard time. So a lot of the debate here, a lot of this sort of movement is not bearing fruit. It's rather bankrupt. It's also a bit of a lie. It's not fair. You're calling a lot of people who aren't racist racist.
Exactly.
You're not making the world a better place.
Right.
You're virtue signaling. You're trying to belong to a group. We are tribal as human beings. We want to belong. And sometimes we're clumsy about it. And young people tend to be a little clumsy and extreme. Young people are extreme. It's well, we all go through a little bit of an extreme. We see the world, you and I see the world a lot more gray. It's just world life is fucking what right. It's complicated. You're young. It's like
one
binary.
Part I certainly left out of that equation was something I think that you're hitting on is that in reality, it's not that most people don't realize this is insane and stupid and not even true, but the way communication works now, a few really loud people can stomp their feet really loud and clap their hands, and all of a sudden they almost can drive the conversation. A few zealots, and out of control mania can actually drive a narrative now, whether it's through Twitter, right. Facebook, right?
The problem is corporations listen to that.
And that's the problem.
What sucks.
And that's what's how much longer can this go on with corporations? Because what's happening is people in Hollywood are losing jobs, becoming unemployable for doing nothing. For the unproven allegations. Now, listen, there are people like, you know, listen, I don't even want to say what Harvey Weinstein. I don't know what he did. If a tenth of what he did.
He's a piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit, right? Of course, right?
Bad example.
Right.
Leave him out of it, but the point,
my point is, you know, I don't say anyone proven, you know, until they're proven guilty, piece of shit, right? Yeah. But the point is, I know a lot of people that were not that. Mm-hmm. They were not that. Yeah. They might. Maybe I don't want them dating my daughter, but they weren't that.
You know what's good about the Me Too movement, though? And I've said this many times, and I work in the business. For a long time, remember that there was a male whisper network. I saw it with my own eyes. I watched women who were competent and professional, and man, oh man, I'm telling you, dude, I could give you names, you wouldn't believe it. And they would get befriended by a studio head or someone like that, and guess what? He was married and all, but they'd get there, and he'd be in a robe with candles.
Yeah,
and they were put in a position where it's like, fuck, man, I gotta deal with this shit now. And so for the first time in history, and this is positive, you have a female whisper network. Now women can go, listen, because it used to be they would talk to each other, go, stay away from that fucking dude. He'll get you in a trailer. And he's powerful. Harvey Weinstein was powerful enough to change your whole, to ruin your career with a phone call. Fact. I know women very well personally who were victimized by that guy. I know him. I dated him. And it was a very real threat. It was a very real fucking thing. And now for the first time, because I'm all about fair play.
Sure.
For the first time, women have now dudes, those predators, those shitheads, and they're rare, but they're shitheads. Those motherfuckers, they're on notice. Now they're terrified because they have a whole litany of women they've done that to. What happens if they get together? You get seven allegations and it's the same story?
Yeah.
Hey, man, when they haven't been talking and they have the same stories, 7, 8, 9, 20 women, 30 women, you're a piece of shit, ain't you?
Right.
You know what I mean? That's a lot of smoke. So I like that aspect of it. I like the fact that—
And I agree with you.
That you got, at least for the first time, you got, you know— And so Hollywood now, because I'm on set every day, like my TV show, Hollywood is in a lot of ways, it's just about business, and it's a good time. And you don't— We're careful. We're always careful on the set. I'm an off-color motherfucker. I love telling— And so are the women on my show. And so are the men on my show. We all do it. But we have to whisper a little bit because you never know if there's an extra who's going to report you. That is, Big Brother is still watching, and that's a problem. But in a way, it makes it even more fun because it kind of ups the perversion and the fucking talk because you can't keep it down. Right. If you want to really fuck with people, make it illegal. If you want people to really get bad, make, you know, have something. If I'm going to get in trouble for it, dude, I'm going to fucking start whispering, you know? So the backlash and so we had an overcorrection, and I think we're going to come back to where it should be.
Lastly, what are your thoughts on what happened with Kobe Bryant?
I think it's such a bummer, man. He's such an extraordinary human being. He reached the top of what he did,
with dignity.
What's that?
And he come back from his adversity. You know, I don't usually get affected by that stuff, but I cried actually yesterday. I actually had tears in my eyes. I really did. So much of it resonated with me. What happened? Blink.
Death comes for us all, brother. And he lost his daughter. You know what I thought? Because I got kids, and I know you do too. I thought about his wife and his three children, especially two older ones, and they have to walk by that 13-year-old's room every day. And that kid's never going to be in that room again. And when you have children, that's the unthinkable, the unfathomable. Dad and our 13-year-old sister's no longer here. My 13-year-old daughter's gone forever. That's the kind. And another family lost, I think, two girls. That coach and his family. And that's the kind of stuff where you just got to hang your head. Sometimes things just suck, man. And it's hard to find meaning in it. Happens every day. But man, when it happens to a great. And it happens to somebody like that.
An extraordinary person. He's extraordinary.
Like 41 years old, and he had a lot to do.
Yeah.
It's just, it hurts you, man. It hurts your heart, for sure. I felt that way. I wasn't even a basketball fan. But that dude is extraordinary. So, and I don't know. So,
Any
there it is. I went home and hugged my kids, I'll tell you that much.
Have you ever, you religious at all?
I didn't grow up with religion, but I could wax poetic on why I think religion is important, as important in some ways as philosophy, in terms of the idea that you need to be able to imagine the notion that the idea of a religious figure, whether it's Christ or whoever it might be, the idea of a perfect man, at least you can imagine. You'll never meet a perfect man, but you can imagine what that's like, and striving and trying to reach that doomed mission of self-perfection probably has its roots in religion. I think religion is very important. It's part of our justice system. The idea that all men are created equal, that's a religious idea. And what that means is not that you and I are equal, and LeBron James and I are not equal, but we are of the same moral worth. Moral worth is very important. Why? Because if you leave it up to scientists and the rationalists, without any idea of religion, without the idea that maybe we have an immortal soul, then you're going to start to justify things like, well, there's a limited number of resources. Get rid of the people who are mentally handicapped. Get rid of the I did. Yeah, you know what I mean. You can start to justify that these people are severely autistic. They're draining our resources. That's what happened in history. Mm. We're all of the same moral worth. So a wretch on the street is worth as much as Jordan Belfort in terms of his life. That's why we do the same amount of time. If I kill a wretch on the street or I kill you,
theoretically.
I do a life in prison. That's an important thing, and that's a religious idea. So I appreciate that. And I could go on and on. That's a long conversation.
I guess I was thinking in terms of more of the aspect that life after death.
You know, man, I'll tell you, Eric Weinstein, who's a theoretical mathematician, is working on the theory of everything. Don't ask, because I don't know. But I said,
do you ever mean reconciling quantum mechanics with relativity?
Dude, I say, I love you, man. See, this motherfucker. I love, how about that? Thank you, Jordan Belfort.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. Yeah, and I said, and he goes, basically he said, well, the theory of evolution is there. We believe in that, but there's got to be more to the story. And I said, give me, what are you guys talking about? And he said, well, a lot of us starting to believe that maybe the simulation is already here. And I went, come again? And he said, well, we might be self-replicating machines,
yeah,
and our biological heritage is long dead,
yeah,
and we're just making better machines, but this has already been happening. So you
and that would reconcile the two equations, by the way.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, so this is a simulation, and he goes, yeah, we're not going to know we're self-replicating machines until we all come together in this neural net, and that's what's happening with the internet. And I was like, what the fuck? You know, so yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm religious.
I'm never watching Terminator again or anything.
Right. I'm too afraid not to be religious. I'm too afraid not to. This doesn't make sense. So there's my answer.
One great quote comes from a woman named Shirley MacLaine, that the difference between the philosophers and the scientists, right, the people, the religious scholars, right, you know, when the scientists get over the hill, say, we already got here, basically. It's the short story,
that's
right?
Right. That's
you're
right.
Arriving at the same point.
We're
in
coming
time.
Back full circle. Yeah.
Buddy, you are a pleasure to have. You're a brilliant guy, funny, and very well-spoken.
Come out to a show sometime.
And I would
stand
love
up.
To. Thanks.
Anytime.
All right, guys, take care of the awesome podcast. Brian is awesome. Check out his show. Definitely check out his podcast.
Yep. Firing the kids, schooled.
Yeah.
ABC, we're there.
Cool stuff. We'll put some links on there. Tell your friends about this because they need to hear it. And I will see you very soon on another episode of The Wolf's Den. Take care. God bless.